The question was asked, how does one deal with children that misbehave? And we have to know, I think, three things, maybe two things, when we deal with children that misbehave. Firstly, is that things don't happen in a vacuum. And secondly, that there are normal things that children do. So I got it out of order, because really the second should have been first and the first should have been second. So let's begin with the second, because that should have been first. Normal children go through stages. So that means that a two-year-old will defy you, and a two-year-old will tell you no. And a five-year-old will steal, and a 7 to 9-year-old will learn how to get around you, and a 13-year-old to a 20-year-old, hopefully they outgrow it by then, will think that they're smarter than you and that, boy, do you have what to learn. So there are certain things that are normal. And the fact that a 15-year-old feels you're so stupid it's hard to be around you, that's normal. That doesn't make it less annoying, but it means that we have to know how to deal with it. And the fact that a 2-year-old is not going to listen to you and is going to say no, and is going to be adamant that they can do it themselves, and they're going to pour the milk all over the table, and you're going to tell them no, they shouldn't pour it alone, and you should pour it, and they will stand their ground. Well, that's good. That's a healthy 2-year-old. And that doesn't mean you have to give in to them. But at least we have to recognize what the normal stages of children are. I just outlined a few. But that's where it's helpful to talk to other parents, and it's helpful to talk to older people, if it's your own parents, if it's your grandparents, if it's your neighbor's parents. Sometimes people's own parents say they don't remember anything or they don't know anything. So you can talk to other people's parents. Find an older couple who are normal, who have raised children, who will be able to tell you when you shouldn't worry about anything. And many times they'll tell you don't have to worry about anything. So that should really be number one. You have to learn what's normal for children, and different children go through different stages. One of the greatest tips for parenting is that you have to be patient. Problems might happen overnight, but they don't resolve themselves overnight. Sometimes they don't happen overnight, but sometimes they do. And you have to be patient and loving with the child. So firstly, we have to understand the child. And firstly, on the same scale, we have to love a child. And a child has to have confidence in the home and in the relationship. And there are certain things that have to be unquestionable. If you've given that to a child, so then you're entitled to demand of a child. And part of demanding of a child is demanding certain behaviors. Now, we have to know what's going on by the child. Some of our children get very hyper when they're overtired. They go crazy. Now, if you realize that the child is behaving under the influence of being tired, for example, then it's not fair to expect of him different behavior. When you're drunk, you don't have control of what you do. To a child, sometimes being overtired could equal being drunk. Now, that doesn't mean he should be allowed to get away with anything he does. But it also means that you don't have a chinuch issue in front of you. You have a temporary challenge. Sometimes a child has a wise aleck cousin who is over, and that wise aleck cousin decides that he could call you by the first name and disobey anything you say, and teach your son that what you say doesn't count. So you have a temporary problem, which if you treat correctly and rein it in, remains a temporary problem. So you don't have a chinuch issue. Sometimes, and this goes over to point number two, you realize that, no, this is a broader issue. The child is having friends who are talking to him about taking drugs, smoking, or all kinds of other problematic issues. That's when you have an issue. That's when you have to deal with it. But yeah, you have to first take a step back and say, wait a second, maybe what I'm encountering here is normal. Some children, when they drink too many sodas, they get very hyper. Some children, when they have too much sweets, they get very hyper. And then the parents are looking for all kinds of chemical solutions when really the chemical is the problem. So stop. Is the child getting what he needs? And no two children need exactly the same thing. I have some children who can go without sleep and be fine. And they need less sleep than their older siblings. And then you run into a challenge. I'm older. How come they get to go to sleep later than I do? So you got to figure out how you answer that question. Sometimes the answer is different children need different things, and sometimes a kid can't swallow that. It's not good for their ego. So you got to give a different answer, or you got to figure out what you do. But I'm just saying, we have to realize that each child is an individual and each child has their needs. And when we speak about behavioral issues, we have to first know what's normal for the child and what the child is contending with. We had a time when one of our kids was antsy. Couldn't sit down still for a minute. So you're making kiddush and the kid is all over touching everything. So you see something's going on. Now, as a parent, you're getting ticked off. You want to make kiddush. You want to have a meal. You don't want him pulling in his sister's pigtails, pulling his other brother by the nose, doing all kinds of shtiyot at the table. But as a parent, you also have to discern between which reactions are my reactions because it's getting on my nerves, and which reactions are really educational reactions. What does the child need? Now, I also live in this house as a parent, and I am entitled to demand certain things for my own benefit. But I have to realize, I have to discern, what am I doing for me and what am I doing for him? What I do for me is also legitimate, but I shouldn't kid myself. I'm not doing it as a chinuch issue. I'm doing it because I need to live in this house too. So I'll give you a small example. Personally, I can't sit at a Shabbos table where everyone's yelling. But children yell. But if I have yelling too much at some point, I can't. That's it. I've lost it. Not that I'll get upset. I'm not part of the table. So if my children want me at the table, right? I want to be at the table, and yet I want my children to be normal children. So sometimes I'll go and help my wife in the kitchen and let them do their thing, even though they're yelling a little bit. And sometimes I'll tell them, guys, that's it. No more yelling. Is it their chinuch need to stop yelling? Sometimes, but sometimes not. Sometimes it's my need. I also live in this house. I'm also entitled to have a Shabbos table I enjoy. So sometimes they're going to have to forgo some of the things that are normal for them as kids in order for me to be able to enjoy the table. But if I recognize that it's my need and not their need, then I'm going to balance it in kind. I'm not going to demand it of them as though it's something they should be doing different. I'm going to say, I need the quiet. Not you guys have to be quiet. I need the quiet now. So a person has to be honest with himself. Not everything that I need is their chinuch issue, right? Sometimes a kid needs to let out certain energies. And the parent thinks he has a chinuch issue. And it's not true. The child has to be outside riding bikes. You keep a child cooped up in a classroom till 4 o'clock in the afternoon. You bring him home and keep him cooped up in an apartment till he has to go to sleep. Of course he's going to go berserk and take apart the house. What do you want from the kid? So then what you have to do is figure out where he's going to have venues to let out the energies he has. So not every issue that we face is really a chinuch issue. Sometimes it's normal childhood behavior, including the need that a child has to be destructive. The Gemara says when a child reaches a certain age, you buy him old earthenware vessels so he can destroy them. When I have electronic equipment that breaks in my house, and not only electronic equipment, all kinds of things that break, so I bring out my pliers and I cut off the electric part so they can't plug it in, and then I give it to them with screwdrivers and hammers, and I make sure they do it in a safe way, and with supervision, either mine or my wife. Unfortunately, it's more often my wife than me because I'm not there to do it, but they do, I say unfortunately just because I feel bad that it falls on her shoulders, but they do break apart. They take it apart, and then they figured out how to put it back together again, but one day they'll get to that too. So they take apart tape recorders that fall apart, and hey, all kinds of things, razor, shaver, haircutting machine that broke, and every few weeks something else goes, a fan that broke, so we gave it to them to take apart. They need to be destructive, so let them do it, and it's legitimate. When I go by a dumpster and I see someone threw out a photocopy machine that wasn't working, a scanner with a photocopy machine. So I looked it over to see what could be dangerous, what couldn't be dangerous, and I brought it home. And with them, we took it apart. So that was very interesting, a lot of fun for them. And the same thing, sometimes I see a huge box. Someone got a washing machine or a fridge, and they have a big box out there so the kids can make it into a clubhouse for a period of time, and that's it. Then it falls apart or they take it apart. You have to give kids the venues to give out their energies. Someone once saw that at 7 o'clock in the morning, I was running around with my son riding a bike. He was learning how to ride, and I was running behind him holding the seat, you know, so he shouldn't fall over, and slowly he's trying to learn how. So one of the people looks at me and says, "A rabbi spends 7 o'clock in the morning running behind his son on a bike?" So I said, no. A rabbi gets up at 6 o'clock in the morning to go to an early minyan to be back in time to go running behind him on a bike. Instead of going to a later minyan, I get up early to be able to do it. just because I have a position doesn't mean he doesn't have needs as a child. He does. He doesn't have to suffer. Like someone once said, a child isn't a korban tzibur. You know, just because you're involved with the tzibur doesn't mean the child has to be the korban. So before we discuss behavioral issues of children, we have to also see that children have normal needs, and very often we don't meet their needs, and we cause the behavioral problem. So that's number one. Now, assuming it's not me that's the cause of the problem, it's not because the parents have been fighting, it's not because the kid hasn't been getting enough sleep, it's not because the kid is on too much sugar and he's too hyper, and it's not because he just has normal energy that he has to expend. So then there can be instances that it is a passing phase, and we don't have to be too quick to react too harshly. Very often in chinuch it pays to wait and see, not to be so quick to react. And secondly, if the time has come when we need to react, so then there are a few steps that I recommend taking. Number one, the couple should talk it over. The couple should talk. Every chinuch situation is something which you will repeat itself. Yeah. I'm saying whenever you're faced with an educational challenge or a behavioral issue, so it repeats itself. And if you didn't react the first time, you could talk to your wife and decide together how you're going to react and react the second time. And sometimes you're going to do a much better job. For example, let's say, we'll take a small, easy example. Let's say the mother is finding that when she tells the children to do something, they ignore her. Okay, common thing. It's not because they aren't eating enough. It's not because they aren't eating correctly. It's not because they're not getting enough sleep. It's because they've learned they can get away with it. Okay, common thing, right? Firstly, perspective. It's not the end of the world. It's not right. We have to deal with it. But it's not the end of the world. It's not like the kid's on drugs. It's not like he's committing suicide. It's not like, perspective. Very often, parents go off the handle on the smallest thing. Take it easy, perspective. It's not right. But remember, there are worse things that can happen. So you always have to have in your repertoire, you always have to keep in your reserves harsher reactions. You should never yell too much or use your last bullet, so to speak. Never use your last piece of educational ammunition, because whatever you think the kid did that is the worst thing in the world, wait, he'll do something worse. You always have to be able to have harsher reactions. And part of the wisdom, I think, in educating kids is to know how to make the lesser reaction carry more weight. So let's take an example. I think that a reasonable parent begins by trying the simple method of talk. Okay? Education involves explaining. So you can do it in one of a few ways. You can try, while all the kids are running around playing and they don't have patience to hear you, to come in and say, "Guys, I've had it. You guys have to listen to your mother when she talks to you." They'll look at you, they won't know what you want from their life, and they'll say, "Okay, yeah, Dad," and you accomplish nothing. You could try to take them one by one and tell them, "I want to talk to you, and I have something serious to discuss with you." And tell them, "Look, this is the issue. We've noticed that when your mother talks to you, you don't listen, and this has to stop. Do you understand that?" And it's always good to put the kid back in the driver's seat. Not just to say what I had to say, but to ask the child, "Do you understand? Do you agree?" I'll tell you a funny story. One of the kids once asked me for sweets. So I said to him, "You know you had a lot of sweets already today." So he said, "Yes." I said, "If you were the parent, do you think you would give it to your son?" So he said, "No." And then he stopped and he realized what he had just said. So he looked at me with a smile and he said, "But I wouldn't have had a child as sweet as me." Sometimes it is good to talk to a child and ask him, "What do you think should happen now? Your mother tells me she's tried talking to you numerous times and you refuse to listen to clean the room. Now, what do you think should happen now?" So the child will usually say, "I'll go clean the room right now and do half a job." But you've already succeeded. You've put the issue on the table, and you've done it in a good way. the child realizes this has become an issue and you're not going to let it pass. You'll notice that I purposely say that when it's the mother that's not being listened to, that it's good that you do the talking. Because it's always better if the father's protecting the mother's honor and the mother's protecting the father's honor. It doesn't have to be that way. There can be instances where a parent will say, look, I notice you're not listening to me and this is going to have to stop. But it is better if you have the option to do that. It is better where each one protects the other one's honor. The kids take better to it, and you're giving them a very good message at the same time. So now you always have to be prepared that things aren't going to change overnight. We don't change overnight, neither are our kids going to change overnight. That doesn't mean you have to let them get away with it, but it means you have to have a certain amount of patience, not to get too upset when it didn't change overnight. So I'm a big believer in trying a few times to talk and explain in areas that it's feasible, in areas that the message can pass. Last night, our two-year-old ran out of our hands and crossed the street, and we're lucky she's still alive. That's not something you can explain to a two-year-old. She has to get a message that will sit very strongly so that it never happens again. We're very lucky she's still alive. Certain things in certain ages require certain reactions to ensure it doesn't happen again. I remember when I was at someone's home and I saw their son trying to stick a fork into the socket. So I called the parents and I said, first I took the kid away and then I said, you know, your son did this. And I was very disappointed at the parents. They spoke to the child like, you know, you shouldn't do that. Okay, now 50-50 they succeeded, because anytime you tell someone something, there's a 50-50 chance they're going to listen. And I don't think they impressed upon the child that he could die. So I was stuck. I'm a guest. You know, I'm going to teach them how to educate their kid. At the same time, I think they're risking the kid's life by not giving a harsher reaction. Going back to our story. So the first time you're going to tell a child, you've already accomplished that the child realizes there's something here that's going to have to change, and that there's something that you're focusing your attention on. I think it's always good to tell a child, now we're going to keep an eye on this. I want you to work on this, and I want you to know that your mother and I are paying attention to this. And we want to see this change. It's important to compliment improvement, but only to a point. Because the child has to realize this has to be a given. You're not doing me a favor when you listen to your mother, you're doing you a favor. That's the way this house is going to run. So it's not like the first time the child listens, you go and give him a candy. No. You tell a child, good, I'm very happy you listen. Small positive note. It's good, but you don't have to go overboard because the child doesn't deserve it. And you're ruining your capacity to be influential in the future, because then he looks at you like a dunce. Ah, so when I do it, I get all these compliments. When I don't do it, okay. No, so I'm not such a great Superman. Fine. And that's not true. That's the child's responsibility. The next time it's going to happen, you have to decide. Do I have to react or do I turn a blind eye? Much of chinuch is about turning a blind eye. As much as chinuch involves the wisdom of knowing what to say when, chinuch also involves the wisdom of knowing when not to talk, when not to see things. I'll tell you a nice story about that. We go out to the yard and we see a bunch of wrappers on the yard. So we start wondering who would throw all these wrappers on the yard. So we go searching and I say, okay, it's not nice. People threw so many wrappers on our yard. Fine, we clean up the yard, and the next day there are more wrappers on the yard. So we're getting a little frustrated. Which neighbor is so dysfunctional in educating their kids that they throw so many wrappers on the yard? And this is happening day after day. And at one point, I say to my wife, you know, we bought special treats for a special occasion we were supposed to have a month down the road. I can't find any of them. Where'd they all go? So she looks and I look, and we both knew where we put it, and they're all gone. And then we look out at the yard, and those other wrappers out there on the yard. So who are the parents who were so dysfunctional whose kids were throwing all the wrappers on the yard? Us, okay? But we didn't know it. The kids were getting up at 5 o'clock in the morning, going to the closet, taking out the sweets, going out to the porch when we're asleep, which is very dangerous where we live, right? I mean, there are Arabs walking by. It's not the safest place for kids to be out alone at 5 o'clock in the morning on the porch. But they were motivated enough to get up early in the morning, go out on the porch, eat the sweets, throw the wrappers overboard, fine, no evidence. Smart, right? They don't put it in the garbage. They don't throw the wrappers in the garbage. You know, when we're around, they don't throw wrappers out in the yard. They know to put it in the garbage, but they knew they couldn't put it in the garbage because obviously they did it once and were caught, right? And this had been going on for I don't know how long. I mean, they polished off there was enough for Kiddush there. I mean, they polished off a lot. It suddenly dawned on us that now we understand why the kids weren't hungry breakfast time. Suddenly a lot of things started falling into place. We never once told the kids a word about it. Because the worst thing you can do to a child is ruin their self-image. If the children would feel like we thought they were thieves, we've lost. We didn't win. One of the key rules in chinuch is you have to maintain a positive self-image. The child has to feel he has what to live up to. If the child feels like you think he's a thief, well then he's got nothing to lose by being a thief. That's what you've told him he is. So we never once said a word about it. We made believe we didn't know about it. We sat down and thought. The first thing we did is my wife and I agreed we're not saying a word. We have to think, we have to digest. We were in total shock. Oh, you're not ready for that. We're not doing anything. We're going to think about it. Then we called a few grandparents and asked them what they thought. And after consulting with other people, we decided the method of chinuch we were going to take, but we never once addressed it directly. So that goes back to the point, you don't have to see everything. As a parent, part of the wisdom is to know what not to react to. You can help the kids in a roundabout way. We had stories like that here at the Mahon, but we don't have time to tell more stories. One of the strengths in chinuch is being able to turn a blind eye. So, we were discussing how the first step very often is telling a child this is the issue and this is what we'd like to see change. And we said that discussing it with a child doesn't have to be threatening. There's no reason it should be threatening. It's a normal conversation where the child could even be on your lap and you're hugging the child as you talk to them, because this isn't the question of you're loving the child or not. You do love the child. And at the same time, part of your responsibilities to the child is to guide them in a proper path. So it could be you're holding the child on your lap, and as you're talking to the child, say, look, I want to discuss something with you. A, B, and C has been happening, and we'd like it to change. Rarely will it change right away. We don't change right away, neither do children. But you might see a slight shift, and then you have to keep prodding it along. Prodding it along means reacting slightly positively. Remember, don't go overboard on this. It's like, oh, I'm so happy, that's so beautiful, you listen to your mother, that's fantastic. No, come on. You're supposed to listen to your mother. Good for you, okay, I'm happy you did it. Onward with life, that's it. You said something positive, you should hear something positive, but don't go overboard. And then you're going to have to react again. Hopefully, there will be times when it's enough to react calmly, and it's enough to point out to the child, you know, this is what's happening, and it shouldn't happen. I'm a big believer that if you talk to a child and the child doesn't listen, you repeat it once but not twice. So let's say, let's take an example. You say, Dov, please clean up your room. We have to get ready for, it's bedtime. Child ignores you. Dov, I don't know if you heard me, I asked you to please clean up your room. It's bedtime. Child ignores you. I don't believe in repeating it a third time. I believe the third time you have to ask a question. Dov, I don't understand. I said something twice. Why isn't anything happening? Now you've posed the question to the child instead of repeating it a third time. The child has to stop and answer you. More often than not, the child will say, I'm getting there, and continue to ignore you. Be prepared for that. He's going to say, yeah, I'm getting there. At which point, I think the correct answer is one of two things. If you're patient enough, you can ask, why aren't you doing it now? And then the child might say, because I want to do something else. At which point, I think you should ask the following question, and I really think you should do this. Why are you doing what you want before what I ask you? And sometimes the child will have a legitimate answer. Notice that none of this involves yelling at the child. It involves a simple question. I said it twice. Why do I have to say it again? If you use this approach, so you're helping the child notice that you've said it twice. If very often we get frustrated. We're ready to yell. We're ready to get off the handle because we're frustrated. But in a child's mind, when he's busy doing something else and you said something, it didn't completely register. Think of yourself when you're very focused on something on the internet. And someone comes and tells you, you know, it's mincha in 2 minutes. And you say, yeah, yeah, I'm coming. And they say, it's mincha in 1 minute. And you say, yeah, yeah, I'm coming. And they say, it's mincha now, I'm going. How often do you even register any of that? Or when you're sitting on the internet and someone comes and tells you, you know, it's already 1 o'clock in the morning, don't you think you should go to sleep? And you say, yeah, but this is an interesting article. And right after this, I'm going to sleep. How many times do you spend another hour or two when people might have told you 15 times, you know how late it is, and you don't even register? And when you stop and think about it, you kick yourself and you tell yourself, why am I sitting here this late? I know it happens to me, so I assume it happens to you. Well, you guys maybe are better than me, but it definitely happens to me. So a child is the same thing. The child is sitting there, he's playing, he's doing whatever he's doing. Very often, they don't register so clearly that you spoke, so that has to change. Meaning a child has to get into the habit that when my parents speak, I have to register what they say. But you can't get upset at the child when that doesn't happen. Assuming it's not a situation, which has happened to me, I think, with almost every one of the kids, which is the following situation. Child sitting on the bed, and you say, it's time to go to sleep, please put your head down and go to sleep. And the child sits there and looks at you, and doesn't budge. And you look at the child, and you wonder to yourself, did he not hear me? So you ask the child, didn't you hear me? So I've had, with almost every one of the kids, that they look back at me and say, I heard you, and I don't feel like doing it. Yeah, kids do that. And then you have to gauge what the correct response should be. Sometimes you can give them one chance and say, you know, that's chutzpah. You better have your head down really fast. And sometimes you have to react much more harshly. And we need to have a different class about what much more harshly means. That deserves a class unto itself. But there are moments when children clearly test your authority. And they're going to sit there and look you in the eye and say, you said this and I'm not going to do that. And that's not a question of the child didn't register what you said. That's a question of the child telling you, if you don't put me in my place, I'm going to put you in your place. So then you have to put the child in his place. So that deserves a separate class, discussing what's correct. I mean, okay, what tools do you have at your disposal? What do you do? But the worst thing you could do to a child at that moment is let him win. Because then the child leads a very scary life. When a child feels he's in the driver's seat and he's controlling he or she, they're controlling the parent, which very often happens. Children can get manipulative and they need parents to guide them and put them in their place and protect them and tell them what's right and wrong. And when a child sees that he can outsmart his parents, which they do on some level, but when he can overtly show the parent, I'm stronger than you and I can run the show, then the child leads a scary life because he doesn't really know how to do that. And you've taken away some of the security that a child needs. A child needs to feel that he's not running the show and that there are limits and there are parents there who know more than him and will take care of him. And when you show the child that he knows more than you or he is more powerful than you, although for that moment the child may smile victoriously, but from that moment onward the child leads a very scary life. And these are scenarios that repeat themselves in different forms. You know, I'm giving one example. You'll encounter it in other ways in your life where the child looks you in the eye and he's telling you, I am going to try to push my borders now. And I'm going to see who's boss. And it takes a certain amount of thought and skill to put the child in his place without killing the child. I mean killing him emotionally. You have to know that balance. And the balance between showing a child you love him and at the same time showing him but you're still the parent and he's not going to get away with running the house. So that's a balance. But coming back to our regular scenario, which is that you've spoken to the child and the child ignores you the first 2 times, so in most situations, the child is just busy doing other things. What you said half registered by him, if at all. And that's why it's very good to stop without yelling and tell the child, I said it twice. Why? And now the child has to pause and answer you, because you aren't just telling him, you're asking him a question. And I think that, again, going back to the rule we said earlier, that you're always better off if you have not used tools, if you have not yet used your repertoire of tools, if you can have this type of conversation without yelling, so you realize that you've already covered a lot of ground that other parents don't get to cover without yelling. A parent that uses these tools will very often be in a situation where they don't have to yell very often. Very often what we yell about is when the child doesn't listen. And very often if you would just ask the question without yelling, just ask, I've said it twice, why do I have to say it again? Or do I have to say it again? You've already reached a point where the child has to deal with what you've said, where other parents have already yelled 10 times and the child hasn't really done anything. So we've just begun, but you asked a good question. I think these are some tools. Of course, every child in every scenario needs to be treated with the individual attention they need. But this is a starting point. So what did we discuss so far? We said we have to know what the norms of a child are, the situation, the age, the external factors. How much sleep is a child getting? Is he overtired now? Is he on too much sugar now? Are there other things in his life that are causing him to behave this way? And then we said you have to gauge what's for me and what's for the child. We said we have to give the child stability and love. We said that it's always good to discuss with the spouse what's going on before reacting and thinking through together what's a good idea to react. We said that we have to know that things take time and that we will have another opportunity to react and that change happens over time. And then we said when we react, we have to react with patience and we have to know what we want of the child and express that to the child, preferably calmly and in a scenario where the child is focused on what we're saying. We have to realize that it takes time for a child to change and we have to give small compliments as things progress and be prepared for the long haul that things will not change overnight and be prepared to comment and help the child along as he goes along. We said that part of the wisdom of parenting is knowing how to turn a blind eye, which means sometimes you know a child can only handle so much. And so even though maybe they've only improved this much and they should improve much more, even for their own benefit, but sometimes you just can't breathe down a child's neck. You have to go slowly with a child. I'll give you a small example. Sometimes a child is a nudnik. Every second they're whining about something else. So you have to verify if there's something else at the core, or maybe it's their personality, or maybe there are other things at play. But at the end of the day, you also can't comment to a child every second. And then we said that you have to try to move forward as much as you can with using as little tools as possible, meaning not yelling and not using the stronger tools that a parent might have at his disposal. Try to advance as much as you can without it, because you always have to remember that whatever the issue is now, there's still a bigger issue waiting around the corner. We'll pick up here, but it's a different time.